Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Make some noise! It's Making Monsters with Taylor Dahl. It's like beer and brats, a perfect combination.
You know the deal.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Making Monsters. We got the dub. 1-0 now. They've got the win. It wasn't the prettiest win, but it's okay. They're still figuring some stuff out. But I am joined today, before we get into the actual preview for this weekend for the Texans game, I do want to recap the game this last weekend a little bit. Week one, there's a lot of things that we need to look at. The defense looked really good, especially in the second half. Offense, not so much for the majority of the game. But Greg Huntington, if you don't remember him, he played for the Bears back in the early 90s, played for the Jags. So some experience up there on that, on the line and on the offensive line, and kind of that view from the offensive line perspective of the defensive line and what you're expecting. So I do want to get into a little bit of that, Greg. But first, thanks for joining me. Obviously, you were there this weekend for the alumni weekend for the Chicago Bears. And that's why this is even kind of a cooler thing, because not only were you there celebrating your time with the Chicago Bears, but you also got to be around a bunch of the old Bears that were there during that time, too.
Yeah, it was really a privilege for me to be there, and ultimately a privilege to play for the Bears, because they're obviously one of the storied programs in the NFL, probably one of the original teams. So to be there with some of the names from the past, the first alumni game I went to, Gale Sayers was there. So that was really neat. And Dan Hampton was there. And then this one, obviously, they were recognizing Steve McMichael, Mongo, for his induction in the Hall of Fame. And unfortunately, he has ALS, so he couldn't be there. But it was just neat to see the generations of players that were represented there. And it, like I said, it really was a privilege to be a part of that program and to be included in Alumni Weekend. It was very electric.
Yeah, and it's I know, like, us as Bears fans, we talk about the just that hasn't been the most fun in the last, especially since I was born in 1990. But it's historical. I mean, it's Papa Bear and Hallis. He's what a big part of how the NFL even came to being the NFL. So it's really cool to kind of see some of that and some of these players that were involved in that. One of the guys you sent the picture of was Chris Orich, and for me, I told you that's like a special place in my heart. Growing up, I had a dog, and his name was Orch. We called him Z Bear, though. So the moment you sent that picture, I was like, Chris Orch was very popular in my household.
Well, you know, I played at Penn State, so we played Notre Dame every year, and Chris Orch was an amazing player, defensive lineman for Notre Dame. At the time, he seemingly had the biggest arms I'd ever seen on a human being. And so I got to play against him in college and probably saw him in some of my my pro endeavors. But it was very neat to see him, because I just watched recently again the 30 for 30 Catholics versus convicts. And, you know, that era of college football, and I even texted you, was like it'll never be matched. And I know you were born in 90s, but the 80s and the early 90s were some of the most epic college football games. So to meet Chris in person, that was special.
Yeah. How is that for, like, coming from college into the NFL and everybody? I do think it's changing a little bit because of the portal and because of NIL. We're seeing a lot more players be in multiple schools. But for a long time, it was kind of like your school was your pride. And then you go to a team and you're playing somebody who may have been your rival in college for your entire career. Was that kind of fun, though? It added to the element of, especially at practices and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. You know, I was drafted by the Redskins, also known now as the Commanders. And that Redskin team had been together in the 80s and won Super Bowls, and it just won one in 91. And when I was drafted in 93, which was the first year of the collective bargaining agreement that allowed for free agency. But, and so you had some players that had moved on through free agency, but I came to a team that pretty much was still intact. And like I said, won a Super Bowl in 91 with Mark Rippon at the helm. And when you come into a locker room like that, it is don't speak unless spoken to. Yeah. When I went to training camp, we were up in Pennsylvania, and I made the mistake of walking into the veterans locker room, not knowing that they had a rookies locker room. And I got cussed all the way out on four. So that was a different time. I always say that I played during an era that we would consider to be old school.
Yeah,
but it was neat to be in the NFL, and you're going, golly, I just finished college and I'm playing against guys that are been in the league for 10 years. And
yeah,
then when you see guys like Reggie White, I mean, you're like, wow, or Bruce Smith, I got to block these guys. So it's very intimidating. But, you know, you learn that you're not that far off from being able to compete with them.
Well, and that's what, let's bring that, kind of wrap it up to, wrap it back around to Caleb Williams and the Bears, because obviously Caleb coming in, being a rookie, and we heard him a lot this offseason talk about, he's very confident. You saw that at USC. You saw that through all of the combine and the draft, all of it. He was very confident, and he even said the words like he doesn't get nervous. He had a quote where he said he hadn't got nervous since his freshman year of high school, and he fumbled two snaps after that, threw a touchdown, and has gotten nervous since. Not saying he was nervous, but there was definitely something there. I think there was a little bit of a reality of, okay, like these defensive linemen coming after me are coming after me really quick and they're really big. Were you getting that vibe at all from Caleb?
I did. I mean, to your point, you know, the Bears in the past have seemingly, hey, live by your defense and score enough points to win, and not necessarily putting a lot of emphasis on the quarterback position, but that's not what their intentions were when they drafted Caleb Williams and his athletic prowess in college. But for any rookie, and, you know, the quarterback position is the most mentally difficult out of any position on the team. And so you add that within the speed of the players you're playing against, it's a whole nother level than college. Even college at the highest level doesn't compare necessarily to the pros. So you add that to being the home opener against with your home fans. It's a big stage, and it'd be hard for me to believe that anybody wouldn't be nervous in that situation. And so I just think it's first game jitters, home opener. You know, but thank God, you know, the defense played a role in order for them to get a win, and a win's a win. And everything comes down to confidence. And every game that you play, his confidence will continue to grow. And, you know, what you saw of him in college, you'll begin to see in the NFL.
Yeah, and there was a couple unfortunate moments. Obviously, Velus Jones fumbled the kickoff at one point. That obviously shifts things one way. Keenan Allen dropped a touchdown, which Keenan doesn't drop passes. So that's one of the things, too, where you kind of felt like the offense as a whole wasn't quite in rhythm either, which I do think is expected too, Greg. How, and this is a conversation I've had a lot on Helmets and Heels, of do you think it factors in how little now guys play, the starters play in the preseason and week one, that being that affecting things?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I think that's true of even, you know, the season where there's a lot of limitations on how much you can actually have contact. I mean, when I went through training camp, you know, sometimes training camp was 4 or 5 weeks long, and you would have 2 days of full padded practices and getting after it. And that's changed. And that may be even why you see more injuries, you know, early on in the seasons, because they haven't conditioned their bodies to take that punishment. But, you know, that's just the reality of the situation. I guess it's equal for everybody. Now, some teams do play their starters more so than others, and that's left up to the coach and his strategy.
Yeah, and it's just something I've kind of realized, because I feel like the last few seasons, and I actually did the numbers yesterday on Helmets and Heels of how the first week of offense has declined the last like 4 or 5 years. And then week two, it's almost like, for example, I think there was 34 passing touchdowns in week one this week. And so 32 out of 32 quarterbacks, there was only 34 passing touchdowns. And that happened last week, last year, where it was similar. But then week two, there was almost 50 passing touchdowns. So even in 1 week, how much more you get on sync with your offense, especially when there's a lot of new pieces. And to me, that is a part of it. You have not only a new starting quarterback, but two of your wide receivers are new, in Keenan Allen and Rome Odunze. The tight end they were playing Gerald Everett a lot more snaps than they were Cole Kmet. That was questionable to me too, but that's also a new tight end. Your running back and DeAndre Swift's new. Your center and Bates is new, or Coleman Shelton, sorry. And so all of these new pieces that are trying to function off of like 15 snaps in preseason just doesn't quite seem realistic.
No, that's true. And then, you know, the rule of thumb is your defense is always ahead of your offense, because your offense is having to implement much more, plays and mental capacity. And so the offense is always lagging behind initially, unless you're a team, let's say like the Kansas City Chiefs, that are established and it's easier for them. But typically the offense is always behind the defense. And clearly that showed where the defense had to rise to the occasion. And, you know, special teams and defense obviously scored more points than the offense did. I think the offense only was able to kick field goals, but no rushing touchdowns and no passing touchdowns. And, you know, my observations in the game, being a lineman, I can tell when things aren't happening at the line of scrimmage. And I, to the Titans' credits, I mean, they had some big boys up front.
Yeah.
And they were getting after it. And then, you know, you mentioned DeAndre Swift. He just wasn't hitting the holes. And maybe there was a reason for that. I wasn't able to see an end zone copy for linemen. That's the best view for us to see who's, you know, doing the right job up front. And maybe it was just a factor of the line not getting movement on the down lineman and him not being able to even hit the hole and kind of, you know, stutter stepping and not, you know, hitting the hole and getting to where he needs to be. But again, you mentioned a lot of the new pieces, and especially even on the offensive line. I mean, you're talking about nearly half of your offense and five offensive linemen, and that is critical that they continue to play together and gel together. And if you're not getting a lot of reps in the preseason, which again isn't necessarily what you're going to see in the regular season, it just makes that much more difficult to get there in a quicker fashion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I do want to ask one question, especially when it comes to that offensive line, because the one thing that I noticed during the game several times, I don't have the exact count, I just remember it happening many times because I tweeted, why does this keep happening? Several tipped passes at the line, right out of Caleb's hands, ball's getting tipped. What is usually leading to that? Is that the defensive line just being quicker on the play? Is that Caleb not seeing a hand in, like, what is really happening? And I know it's probably different for each one, maybe a little bit different things were happening, but I want to say there was four or five during this game.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's just, you know, pure luck. A lot of times that means that the offensive lineman is doing his job by not letting the defender get around him quickly, and he's stalemated, and then he's watching the quarterback, and when he releases the ball, then they jump up and knock it down. Now, I guess the closer you get to the quarterback, if the linemen are being bull rushed and then they're putting the hands up to tip the ball, that could be it. But that happens, and it's very frustrating when you felt like you've done your job blocking, you know, like when I played, you know, if you're blocking John Randall and you're able to stymie him and then he's able to jump up and bat a pass down, you're like, what are you doing here?
And that's what I kept feeling. It happened several times, and I tweeted about it. And someone sarcastically was like, he's small. He's only 5'10". I was like, no, he's not. He's 6 foot. He's not that little to be able to, like, he's seeing over the offensive lineman. That's not the issue. With the offensive lineman, Greg, because obviously that being kind of your biggest focus as your career and being a lineman, So we got a guy on one side and Darnell Wright, the right tackle, who was in year two, who I think probably had the best game of the offensive linemen. And then you have on the other side of Braxton Jones, he's in year three. So two decently young guys, a new piece in your center, Tevin Jenkins, who I think has the possibility to be the best guard. You wouldn't have been able to see it in this game because probably the only play that you saw him, he fell on the one fumble and recovered it. But he's been banged up. It's been injury after injury with Tevin Jenkins, so it's been a concern in Chicago. And then that left guard, the right guard position has kind of been a lot of movement. I mean, 3, 4, 5 different guys have played there the last couple of years trying to figure out what to do with that. That inconsistency, how much does it affect the offensive line when you are really trying to get a rhythm going with your offense?
I mean, obviously a lot, because you're having to move in unison on every play. You know, as an offensive lineman, the advantage that you do have is that you know the snap count. And so it's always vital to anticipate the snap count, get a good first step, and get into your guys, whether it's a front side, you know, scoop block or backside slip block, where you're working with your fellow linemen. And when you have guys that haven't necessarily played with each other that much, and then you throw in, like you said, the center's new, and I don't know what year he is in the league, but, you know, next to the quarterback, you know, your center has to be the most intelligent player out there, you know, identifying the Mike backer, and then, which, you know, then sets all the rules for everybody else, or even long distance passing downs. You'd be amazed at what defenses do to disguise where they're going to actually line up by the time the ball snaps. And, you know, that's your center that's got to be able to identify where everybody's going. So over time, you know, injury is another X factor, because, you know, you're plugging in somebody else that doesn't necessarily, you know, and for the most part of my NFL career, I was a backup lineman. And when you get thrown in there, you're not necessarily in sync with the guys that have been playing next to each other. I remember even being in Jacksonville, you know, with Dave Wydell, and I'd get thrown in at center. Well, I wasn't snapping the ball back on as a shotgun fast enough for Mark Brunell the way that Dave Wydell was doing. Well, there you have it, you know, because I was a new piece to that equation. So,
yeah, and that's what I think that a lot of the frustration in Chicago when it comes to the offensive line is just getting that cohesiveness, the consistency, because there's been a lot of injuries, unfortunately. So hopefully those things start to pick up, you know, when you get those five guys, when you choose. The question is at right guard. I think once they kind of solidify that piece, as long as people can stay healthy, I feel like they have a good, decent core. Let's go to the other side of the trenches, because I know at one point we were kind of texting back and forth about both sides of the trenches were kind of getting worked for a minute. It felt like Tennessee in that first half could just run anywhere, wherever, in the middle, on each side, right down the defensive line's throat. It kind of changed in the second half. I think some momentum picked up. But what were you seeing between that first and second half when it comes to the defensive side of the ball on the line?
Yeah, you know, I made the comment earlier that, you know, the Titans had some pretty big boys. I mean, I don't know what the average weight across the line was there, but they were big and they were getting after it. And they, you know, clearly seemed to be gelling and getting movement on the down linemen, which then, you know, your next task is to get up to the second level to the linebackers. So if you're getting movement on the D linemen, it makes the linebacker's job that much more difficult. So, yeah. You know, I mean, at one point it was 17-0. I'm like, wow.
Yeah,
this isn't good. And even their quarterback, you know, seemed like he was playing with some confidence. But, you know, that's just the way football goes. You know, turnovers and special teams and all those kind of things. It's like they say, it's never easy on any given Sunday to win the NFL. So good thing, again, it's a W, and the defense really secured that W. But hopefully then the areas that we've discussed with the offensive linemen, Caleb Williams, DeAndre Swift, again, got to win. Let's work on it. Let's improve in the areas that we need to improve and continue to be, you know, gelling together and be consistent going forward.
How much does it affect to an offensive lineman? Because one of the things that Eberflus does in his defense is they're very heavy rotational. A lot of these guys move around a ton on the line, and it's something that I feel like we didn't see as much as we did last year. Maybe that's Eric Washington not wanting to rotate as much, or maybe some of the depth pieces weren't there to where they could do it. But it is something you see a lot. How hard is that on linemen when you have guys that are able to play outside and then move inside and get pressure from wherever they are on the line?
Yeah, well, typically, you know, defensive linemen, they rotate throughout the game. Offensive linemen do not. I mean, yeah. It's us five guys for, you know, long drives. And so when, you know, the defensive linemen are rotating in and out, I mean, they're not as gassed as maybe you are. And that can be an advantage to them. So, you know, obviously endurance for linemen is extremely important. So,
yeah. What about, let's a couple more before I let you go. So if we go back to the secondary, obviously, to me, a big part of why they won that game. We talk about the special teams play by Jonathan Owens, the blocked punt that turned into a touchdown. But I feel like that kind of brought in just a momentum on the Bears side. But Tyreek Stevenson gets the pick, which it was a weird play by Will Levis. Not sure what he was thinking in that moment. Yeah. But, take what you got and run with it type of situation. But even then, I really do feel at that point, the corners, we read the stat, Jalen Johnson, who just got paid this offseason, only allowed one catch for negative 2 yards. And that he, I think, was only targeted 3 or 4 times. So they're also kind of scared to get the ball his way anyways. But it's not like the Titans don't have weapons. They have Calvin Ridley, D-Hop was, I think, limited. I don't know how much he was actually out there, but they have playmakers. So being able for that secondary to kind of shut things down in a big moment towards the end of the game when they needed to, it was that something that was kind of like being talked about too?
It was. And just for your listener base, I've mentioned the quarterback being the mentally difficult and the most difficult position in football. But physically, in my opinion, it's the secondary and cornerbacks that have to backpedal with a guy that's running straightforward at them. And then they make a turn and that cornerback's got to turn his hips and then stay with them. And so it's important that you obviously have a good secondary, and something that helps benefit the secondary is if you have a decent pass rush, meaning you're putting pressure on the quarterback and making the quarterback get rid of the ball quicker than having, let's say, 5 seconds back there, because to be able to cover somebody like that, that's not easy. And so it's encouraging to see that the Bears have a good secondary. So if they can put together the pass rush, which will help them, then I think it'll help them throughout the season.
Which has been a concern. It's been one of the talks all offseason is, do they have enough at pass rush? Montez Sweat is a force, and he's one of the ones you talk about in the league. But outside of that, it's a couple guys that have been more of like depth pieces, rotational pieces, and a DeMarcus blocker. And then they actually, Daryl Taylor had 2 sacks. He's actually my monster of the week, because they just signed him from Seattle not that long ago, and nobody was expecting him to really make much impact. And then here he is getting 2 sacks in his first game. So those little moments, to your point, Greg, I think will be kind of the make or break of the Bears defense. I love the linebackers. I think Tremaine Edmonds is a stud. TJ Edwards is underrated and probably one of the better linebackers. People just don't talk about him. And then the secondary you just mentioned can be really good. So if they can create some sort of pass rush with what they have up front, I really do think it could be a dangerous defense. And I think it's what you started to see towards the end of that game.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with your comments. And it's always refreshing when you have a free agent come in that actually produces on day one, because you just never know. People's attitudes when they get, whether it's they got a big payday or, and then other times, situations don't work out of the team. And then a guy gets a breath of fresh air when he goes to a new team and he puts the old team behind him, and then he's able to perform and has more confidence and less pressure on him. So,
yeah,
good to see.
Let's look ahead just for a minute this weekend, the Houston Texans. That's definitely a different world than what Tennessee Titans are right now. I think to me, it's a limit CJ Stroud as much as you can. They have so many weapons. CJ Stroud's really proven himself to be this guy. And then not only that now, but they have guys coming off each side when it comes to pass rushing with Danielle Hunter. And then obviously Will Anderson. So what is your insight on how to handle the Houston Texans?
Yeah. I'll let me say this. Let me just give a disclaimer. I've been retired since 2000, so it's been 24 years. And I actually probably more identify with fans than I do as a former player, because I'm not necessarily a huge student of the game. But it's strange to me that the Bears are playing 2 AFC South teams back-to-back, which could be good for us here in Jacksonville if they can continue to deliver losses. But, the Texans came out of nowhere last year. They were really considered probably the worst team in the AFC South. And then obviously with CJ Stroud being, phenomenal rookie season, and then going all the way to the top. And then I believe they made it into the playoffs. So they're forced to be reckoned with. Is it an away game for the Bears?
Yeah.
Which
they're hitting the road now.
Yeah. So, winning on the road is difficult. And, I'll go back to my Jacksonville days when I played under Tom Coughlin. His rule of thumb was you win all your home games and you go 50% on the road. So, but any game you can win on the road is a good one.
Good one, yeah.
It's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to definitely be a test. I think that the amount of guys that I said that's on their offense in general, the way that C.J. Stroud's able to get the ball around, and I think this is a game the Bears actually have to score offensively to win. So hopefully they're able to do that. But, Greg, thank you so much, and I hope you had fun up in Chicago and Alumni Weekend. I know it's fun to kind of be able to chat a little bit about old times and see that stuff. But thank you for hopping on with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, if I may just take a few closing remarks. If you can see my jerseys in the back, you can see the 34 patch. So when I played there from 97 to 99, Walter Payton was doing broadcasting, and I got to meet him. And what a privilege it was to get to meet him. He was a tremendous individual, and unfortunately, he died very quickly of liver cancer. And so that's that. And then the last thing I'll say to your listeners, I just so appreciate the fans. It's the fans that make our game great. I tell everybody, if it wasn't for the fans, then we would just be playing a game of pickup football at some high school field nearby. I mean, the fans have really made this game what it is in terms of the revenue and all that. So my hat always goes off to, the fans. So thank you for your listeners being fans.
Well, of course. And thanks, Greg. I know sometimes they're vicious. Chicago can be vicious sometimes, but they are. They're passionate and they love the Bears. They love their sports. They love. And you can just tell the way that this offseason went, it was a little bit toxic because there were the people that wanted to keep Justin, the ones that wanted Caleb. It was a little bit messy. But in the end, they're going to go. They're going to pack out Soldier Field and they're going to share Bear down no matter if the offense scores a touchdown or not, as long as it's a It's kind of is what it is. But yeah, thank you, Greg. And obviously, I'll see you around, but enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah. Thank you, Taylor.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Alrighty, everybody, let's continue on this. I guess it's a recap / preview because we just talked a ton about what happened last weekend, what went wrong, what went right. Now it's time to look ahead, turn the page. Both the Bears and the Texans are 1-0. So there's actually six matchups this weekend, or six teams this weekend who are going to be they're both 1-0 battling each other. So it's going to be an interesting weekend in NFL. But Cole Thompson joining me, he's part of the Texans Wire. If you remember back at a Hall of Fame game, which seems now like forever ago, Cole, you joined me then. How much has anything changed in Houston since Hall of Fame game to now? Has there been any significant changes?
For starters, I was waiting for the phone call. It took it all week to get to me. I was like, oh my God, Taylor's not going to leave me off this time. Nothing's really changed, minus the fact that you have a healthy Joe Mixon, which might make this team more lethal on the ground. I was on a podcast yesterday talking about what this team did last year. And 10-7 was a good mark for a first-year coach with a young quarterback, but you felt like that CJ had to grow up in front of your eyes because there was no run game. There was no security blanket in that second move. The offense had to win through the air. They had to win through consistent plays. And now you get that second gear with Joe Mixon, who comes on over from Cincinnati, who's fully healthy. He's recovered from the quad injury. And the guy fits the offense because of whether or not we say that Zach Taylor and Bobby Slowick run the same brand of offense, the ideologies are basically cut from the same Shanahan cloth. So you have a good understanding about what you want to do in the run game. And you watched last week when he got to the outside corner, he was physical of being able to push up field for an extra few yards. He wasn't afraid to lower his shoulder. He was embracing contact. And so now you add that into the mix along with a more stable version of what you're going to get in the front seven, which I thought was a very weak point during training camp. I thought the secondary looked good. And lo and behold, the problem was that the pass rush just wasn't getting to the quarterback, probably because they want to keep CJ Stroud upright. Yeah. Which allowed you to see the flaws in the deep ball passes that Anthony Richardson was able to sling it around the pill like no one's business. And but the same point is, Taylor, like you can't be so annoyed at the secondary because both Derek Stingley and Kamari Laster combined for giving up four catches for 39 yards. And it was the safeties that allowed those three explosive plays. And really, that was 152 yards of the 212 passing yards that you saw from Anthony Richardson. So it's like, you still feel like this is a good team. Yeah. There's some flaws. Everyone has some flaws in the first game. Caleb Williams is not going to throw for 95 yards every single outing. And CJ Stroud and Joe Mixon are not going to look like all pros that are taking over the NFL week by week. We know that there is a middle ground for both.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I did a whole on helmets and heels. I did my whole tangent on how kind of off the entire offenses were in the NFL, aside from probably CJ Stroud and Baker Mayfield were the two quarterbacks that you felt like, which wild, but was what it was. And the rest, the amount of quarterbacks that threw under 200 yards, the amount of quarterbacks that didn't have any touchdowns or maybe just one touchdown, a ton of picks thrown. And so those are things that change, obviously, between just week one and two alone, but throughout the season, like you said. But I know we'll talk a ton about the offense. I want to talk a little bit about the defense because, as you mentioned, there's two guys coming off the edge and Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter who are vicious. Danielle Hunter absolutely killed the Bears last season in both meetings. So I know they have that in the back of their head. And then now you get Will Anderson on the other side. There is a fun little storyline there because all of the film we watched of Darnell Wright when that we drafted him, he went up against Will Anderson and kind of shut him down in that one time that he was matched across from Will Anderson. So it's kind of their rematch game. That'll be a fun little storyline to kind of follow. But tell us about those edges. I know last week, I think they only ended up getting two sacks last week, but they're the kind of guys that even if they're not getting that official sack number, they're creating so much, they're wreaking so much havoc up front and creating so much pressure. Tell us about that, what expectations of what to expect on the edge.
For me, just personally as an SEC guy, I cannot wait to have the third Saturday in October rematch down at NRG Stadium on Sunday Night Football. That's going to be great. But yeah. No, I think what you have to look at is the impressive part about Houston's defensive line was they didn't get any sacks from Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. The sacks came up the middle from the new guys in Foley Fotokoski and Mario Edwards Jr. That's where you saw the pressure rate. And I think what's really interesting is that if you know anything about a D'Amico Ryans defense, he loves smaller body defensive tackles that can win with the lower center of gravity to be able to bull rush and add pressure up the middle. That's why you look at guys who have fit the brand of San Francisco's defense for years because they are a lot smaller, but they're bull rushers and they're quick, they're agile. And so when you add that level and you lose a guy like Sheldon Rankins and Malik Collins, you try to improve that by getting guys who fit that are cost-friendly. But Danielle, again, the thing that we know about him and that you guys unfortunately know about him is that he is a wrecking machine coming off the edge and he's physical. He looks like an action figure. I mean, like there's no other way to put it, but the man is just built to scare the living bejesus out of you. And I can only imagine what Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright are going to have to go up against. It's horrifying because I feel like that if he does not get calm with you and just build like a good relationship, he will eat you alive. And so that's what you can expect. But the thing is that it's going to be the Will Anderson game. He was a guy that last year took so many strides very early on in his career just to be able to win with finesse, with power. And keep in mind that this was a player that when he was in Alabama, he was an outside linebacker. And when they moved him down to the defensive line, he shifted inside to play a 4-eye technique. So he was kind of learning the basics of how to be a pass rusher with his hand in the dirt full time coming off the edge. And you wonder, well, he got bullied at times. And so he said this offseason, one of the big things that he wanted to do was build up his bulk. He wanted to keep the speed, but he wanted to add a little bit more size to him. So he gained about 16 pounds of muscle that's going to give him the ability to hold that leverage on the outside. What I think is going to be really interesting is how quickly can Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright make this more so a game where they shift to the outside and they allow the open creases from that C gap. Because if you're able to kind of take them out by shuffling towards the corner, you might allow Caleb a little bit more time to set his feet, look downfield, make the right decisions. Because if you're already going to get that interior pressure from Foley Fotokoski and from Mario Edwards Jr. So the last thing you want to do is watch as a stunt move happens where a Braxton Jones loses a rep to Will Anderson from the inside track. And now you have two guys closing in the middle and Caleb has to throw into coverage, which could lead to an interception. And again, this is a team that is known for getting takeaways. Last year, top 10 in the ability to create pressure rate and top 10 in takeaways.
Yeah, and I think that when you're speaking on that interior, good news for the Texans is the interior of the Bears offensive line is probably the weakest. They've been trying to figure that out. Now we find out today Ryan Bates didn't practice, so that's one of the guys that they've been figuring. Like Coleman Shelton's been kind of labeled as that center. The right guard has gone, Nate Davis and Ryan Bates. They've been rotating that, trying to figure out who is better. And now Ryan Bates looks like he might not play, so it's going to be kind of forced into this line that maybe they don't want. And if you're creating interior pressure, that sounds like a disaster. Are there concerns at all when it comes to, because obviously Dylan Horton, and I'm sorry if you hear this dog barking. Yeah. They're not my dogs. I was like, I am dog sitting. I told you this off air, but this
no, they're voicing their opinion on why Caleb's going to kick ass this week. That's what they're doing.
I hope so. But I could tell, I'm like, they're probably like, why this girl come home or, and then put me in a room while she's talking. But so obviously Autry and Dylan Horton both not playing. And so is that a concern at all when it comes to the rotation on the edge?
I don't think so, because when you really pinpoint it, Autry's a guy that's going to play a mix of both roles, kind of similar to Mario Edwards. They brought him in because of his ability to be a defensive tackle from his time in Indianapolis. But he spent the last 3 years playing defensive end in a 3-4 technique. So he's more so going to be used as that situational pass rusher that you can work against the run inside or outside. The Dylan Horton news is still a sad situation because of, again, he was kind of turning the corner and then unfortunately got diagnosed with lymphoma, had to go on the NFI list. But you still have Derek Barnett and you still have Jerry Hughes. Hughes has been in the league for 14 years now. He's been a very consistent, quality number two pass rusher. Now he's kind of taken over as that number four role. And to be completely frank, one of the big reasons why the Texans were able to keep pace last year was because Derek Barnett landed on waivers and he ended up being a really interesting find. He had 3.5 sacks and 4 tackles for losses when he had a fill-in for Jonathan Grenard and for Will Anderson. So he's kind of like that multi-chess piece that can play both sides of the line. You can shift him inside whenever you're trying to pass rush. So let's say you're losing battles with Foley Fotokoski. What you'll do is when you know it's a third and long and you need to be able to force Caleb into making mistakes, you throw Barnett into the 3-eye technique. He wins against a guy such as Tevin Jenkins, or in this situation, it kind of sounds like it's going to be Nate Davis for you guys going into this game. So that's what you'll do. They feel confident in the two veterans because if they've been in these situations before where they are rotational guys. Naturally, Danico Autry, you're paying $10 million per year for him to be that difference maker. You want him on the field, but you also are okay with having Jerry Hughes and both and Derek Barnett be average to slightly above average number three pass rushers in this unit.
When you're talking about, let's switch over to the Bears defensive side, because I think a lot of the strengths we knew, well, a lot of us had the feeling the secondary was going to be good. It was a thing. Jalen Johnson, the best, one of the best corners in the league. Tyreek Stevenson just keeps getting better. We just saw the pick that he got from Will Levis, even though a very weird thing that Will Levis was doing in that moment. But Tyreek Stevenson just keeps getting better. Kyler Gordon, too, at that nickel corner spot has really proven himself quickly, too. And then you get Kevin Byard, who I think was a great addition because it just adds some, like, veteran side to that safety room, which I knew they had Eddie Jackson. Eddie Jackson struggled, had a lot of missed tackles, had some issues there. It looks like those things are kind of solved. There was confidence there. There was confidence in the linebackers and Tremaine Edmonds and obviously TJ Edwards. The line was a concern. And I think that outside of Montez Sweat, there was a lot of expectations of how big of a jump Javon Dexter can do, can make. Andrew Billings, who's been a very solid under the rating signing, honestly.
Really under the radar signing.
Yeah, he's just, especially against the run, he's so good. But then the other side across from Montez Sweat, Cole, has been a very big question mark. Not very long ago, they go and make a trade with Seattle, getting Daryl Taylor. Daryl Taylor gets 2 sacks, multiple pressures, forced fumble, was all over the field in this game. Now, I don't know how much that changes if they're going to ease off of DeMarcus Walker a little bit, or maybe they'll just evenly rotate them and see what goes on. But pleasantly pleased by the pass rush, to be honest, from last week, which was one of my biggest concerns. what, from your side of the ball, are you guys looking at when it comes to the defense and what you guys, that what Texans have to face with this defense?
What's really interesting, Taylor, is that both D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud gave a huge testament to what that secondary does. And they brought up Jalen Johnson's name. They brought up Tyreek Stevenson's name. C.J. even said, I remember playing against Jaquan Brisker and his ability to be a ball magnet when he was at Penn State. So the experience about playing against number nine, who was one of my favorite safeties to scout when he was coming out of Penn State a few years ago. Kyler Gordon, as you brought up, I hated that they played him on the outside. I knew that he was going to have to fit in the slot. He's done a really nice job at that standpoint. D'Amico Ryans mentioned that the thing that really makes Chicago's defense hard to game plan for is that he likes watching as TJ Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds play in coverage. So it takes away the middle of the field, the way you want to utilize your tight ends, the way you want to utilize your slot receivers. The thing that I wonder about in this game is, can you continue to build on the ground with Joe Mixon? And really on the outside edge, because Grover Stewart and DeForest Buckner made life hell in yards after contact for Mixon when he had to run through a gap, because they're just bigger bodies that were winning against the interior blocking for Houston. But the outside corner, you watched as he was able to get initial contact and immediately pick up 2, 3, 4, 6 yards after plays, to where you set up a second and manageable, you set up a third and short, and it opened up the playbook for various formations. So I feel like that until you have to start delivering those deep shots to Nico Collins, the quick routes on the outside to Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs being an absolute cannon of a magnet, you don't have to throw the football, because if you still have that element of trusting your ground game. The problem is that, and I was on a show yesterday here in Houston talking about, you have a 29-year-old running back that has been known for having the ability to be a workhorse. I think if you put all of his years fully healthy in Cincinnati, he averaged like 243 carries per season. But that was also when he was 26 and not 29, and on a 3-year contract where you expect him to be your main source of running, and a big reason why he's going to take pressure off of CJ. So I think what's going to be really interesting in this game is, how quickly can you find the chink in the armor of whatever that may be at that second level? If it's Kyler Gordon, if it's Tremaine Edmonds, if it's TJ Edwards in coverage, that will allow you to target, whether it be Brevin Jordan, Dalton Schultz, who right now may or may not play in this game. He's dealing with an ankle injury. Cade Stover, the rookie out of Ohio State. Stephon Diggs, who's going to be the slot receiver for this matchup. I think that you want to target that intermediate part of the field and really that middle part of the field, because you know that you're going to lose battles in Jalen Johnson versus Tank Dell or Tyreek Stevenson versus Nico Collins. You're not going to win every battle. But if you can take that middle part of the field, and even if that includes using the ground game as well, that's going to be, I think, a big blessing in disguise. The thing that really helped for Houston is, even though they weren't great on third down against Indianapolis, they set up third and manageable. The last thing you want to do is be third and uncomfortable. You don't want to show your hands on what you have to do when you open up the playbook. I think that that's really the difference between these two matchups.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, because I think that last week, obviously, the defense played well. It took a little bit, honestly, for them to get going. It also, a lot of people are saying, okay, it was Will Levis. But I also think when you look at some of the people, you're going against a Tyler Boyd and a Calvin Ridley and a DeAndre Hopkins. And it's not like they don't have receivers and weapons in Tennessee. They just have some question marks around that quarterback, who some people are high on. There's guys like Pete Prisco who think Will Levis is going to be something, but I think most don't completely agree with that. But when it comes to the Bears side of the offense, you mentioned under 100 passing yards, no offensive touchdowns. It was the weirdest game. We won because we had a blocked punt touchdown, a pick six, and then a 2-point conversion is what ended up winning the game for Chicago. Very weird, very quirky. So is Houston kind of looking at this offense as being stagnant, or are they looking, do you think they're looking at it as being like, okay, that's a one-off. This is week two. It's going to be a little bit different.
CJ said the thing that stands out about Caleb Williams is his ability to make those wild throws, and that he's a hyper athlete. The thing is also that he mentioned that sometimes making the right read and making the quick read and the small read will set you up for better success. To be yourself in this game, don't allow yourself to be hindered by what you think your energy should be. And he knows this because of, again, much like Caleb, this was a guy that came into a situation where he was supposed to be the savior of a franchise. But the difference is, when you talk to Texans fans, they had to get a new savior because of the Deshaun Watson situation. And Bears fans have been hearing, this is the year we're going to have a 4,000-yard passer since the creation back in 1920. So it's a little bit of a different feel. But still, I think the thing that stands out is that the wide receivers are special in Chicago. Now, what happens with Keenan Allen? What happens with Roma Dunze? Rather injury report, neither practice today. The MCL injury is one that you don't want to risk with the Dunze, so maybe he won't play. Maybe you activate Tyler Scott in this game, but it takes away an element of superstardom. They can throw it. I mean, I've watched so much tape on Caleb Williams just from college and scouting him. The accuracy is there. The arm strength is there. The ability to create madhouse backyard football plays is phenomenal. And he's got that touch on the football that a wide receiver that is up the caliber of a Keenan Allen, especially at the caliber of DJ Moore, will be able to adjust on the fly, track it down, and get a big play. And the big thing that you have to look at if you're a Texans fan, are you going to be susceptible once again to the big plays? Because last week, for most of the afternoon, Anthony Richardson did not have a lot of success. There was a lot of three and outs. He overshot Adonai Mitchell. I can't count how many times. But he also found a way to get Ashton Doolin a 56-yard touchdown. And he found a way to get Alec Pierce a 61-yard touchdown. And then he had a 56-yard pass to Alec Pierce. And so those three plays took up 60% of the throws. And you have a young cornerback in Kamari Laster that honestly reminds me a lot of Tyreek Stevenson, where the hype coming out of college was really promising. Not the best rookie year, but then a rebounding next year to where it's like, okay, great number two. We feel confident in him moving forward. Our secondary is safe. Derek Stingley, who now fully healthy, very much reminds me of Jalen Johnson, going to be a guy that you're going to have to pay because of when he's on the field. It is a difference maker. But the slot position, you have Jalen Petrie, and now you have another young guy, whether it be Kalen Bullock, or you have an insecure and kind of liability with Eric Murray opposite of Jimmy Ward. You can take those deep shots. So I think for Houston, they're trying to make sure that they're playing not just man coverage where things stay in front of them, but they're making it to where they have to throw it. They have to throw quick passes. That's where the pass rush comes in. Last week, it did feel like that Houston could have been able to get into the backfield. And when you said the sacks, of course, sacks don't tell the entire story.
Yeah.
But if you get a sack on Anthony Richardson, which again, another one of these hyper athletes that is just, he's built like one of one. There's nobody out there like him. If you can get Caleb down, then you don't have to worry about your secondary making the mental mistakes that they have. But sometimes you need that pass rush to get there because of there are those explosive plays that set you up inside the red zone to where Cairo Santos, who last week got 6 points and was a big difference in the win.
Yeah. Yeah. Kyra's been very efficient. There was a couple of seasons ago where he was struggling and he admitted, he was like, I need to move it to a different hash mark, moved it to that hash mark since then has been fantastic. So I like that he kind of identified, labeled, and changed what he felt was, you know, obviously was wrong with the kicking. This is a little bit of a side note, but also part of the reason that last week also looked like an absolute hot mess in the first half. Valus Jones. I mean, was this a, Do you remember him coming out? Like, out of Tennessee, he was this dude that was like this return man, and like he could do everything when it came to the return game. He cannot catch. It's insane that he can punt, drop this many punt returns, kick returns, touchdowns, but not only drop it, but he like punted it like 10 yards after he dropped it. I was like, is that just luck or like what is going on there?
Taylor, I hated the pick. I'm not gonna lie. When it happened, I remember sitting inside the Texans draft room and I remember watching him and I was like, why in the third round are you taking a guy that probably at best is a kick returner or a punt returner and he offers no value as a receiver? And also he's like 25. I was like,
he's like 28 years old now. And he's like,
you're taking an older prospect that you don't think is going to be that good at receiver. I remember just, I loathed that pick. That was that. And I grew up in a household with so many Bears fans. And I texted my cousin Greg and he's like, I can't believe we just took a 25-year-old. It's like, oh, don't worry. It's going to get worse. He's not a receiver either.
By the way.
You're digging 6 feet deep. It's not looking promising for you guys right now. So I don't know. I mean, you got DeAndre Carter back there now. So maybe things will change. But is Velus playing in this game? Because that's all.
I mean,
a win.
I don't even know what they're going to do at this point, honestly, with him, because it's been too much. Like, yeah, it was honestly kind of a joke at first of, oh, muffed punt. And then they took him off of punts and put him in kick returns. And they're like, well, he never dropped a kick return or fumbled a kick return in college. It was the punt returns. Like, he always kind of struggled with punts. So you move him there, and then now it's been multiple of those. And then you try and use him in the receiving game. He fumbled multiple of those. So then they try and move him to a running back. And that was kind of the hype in this offseason around Hard Knocks was, okay, well, move him, let him be a running back. And honestly, it didn't go terribly. I saw even last year towards the end during the Cleveland game, he was used as a running back a little bit. But it's just like you used a third round pick on a guy that you literally don't even know where to put him on the football field. And to be honest, I think most people are just shouting cut him at this point, because it's just, he's hurting us way more than he's benefited us.
I mean, they were saying at one point he's a Kirkland brand Debo Samuel. Well, it's actually more so a Dabo shameful pick. That is what we got to call it at this point.
Yeah, I remember, because I think that the Senior Bowl, I think maybe he played
Senior Bowl. He had such, this is the, I love the Senior Bowl. I love Jim Nagy. I love Mobile. I think it's an awesome environment to get these prospects out there. Not every person that looks good at the Senior Bowl is going to pan out. I remember that Hassan Reddick gained so much hype after the Senior Bowl, and they played him for the first time at outside linebacker, not a defensive end, because he was a defensive end in college. And then immediately he had a good combine. He was taken 13th overall. And I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good pick. You know, good for him at the Senior Bowl. It's like, we're going to play him at inside linebacker. And I'm just like, okay, well, you just wasted the 13th overall pick. Good job, Steve Kine. Appreciate you, buddy. Yeah. That's the problem with the Senior Bowl. It's like, yeah, you get good film, but there have been so many times, and unfortunately, the Bears took one of my favorite players in Anthony Miller that looked great there. And I'm like, that's the Senior Bowl.
I have so much love for Anthony.
The Senior Bowl lies. It just does.
And we've used it a few times, and some of it has worked in just the last 4 or 5 years. I think Ryan Poles likes the Senior Bowl maybe than previous GMs. Because I want to say Darnell Wright he had a really good Senior Bowl. I think it was Darnell Wright.
I know Gervon Dexter was there one
year.
Zach Pickens was there one year. So
yes,
they were there. I knew that.
Because I feel like it was the year the Bears, I'm trying to remember what it was.
I don't know if Wright was there. There was a guy who did go from that class, and it wasn't just Dexter. There was somebody else. I'm blanking on who it was. Tyler Scott went there. I think, and Scott had a pretty decent day. And again, like sometimes you hit. Like Tank Dell looked awesome at the Senior Bowl, and I have to be the one to personally say I have to eat crow for Tank Dell. I hated the pick at first because of a 5'9", 165-pound receiver that was great at the University of Houston, but going up against lesser competition than what you see from other opponents. Also, I figured he was going to be a dude that probably was limited to the slot. Well, now he's your Z receiver, and he's absolutely a stud and is beloved in the city. And I was wrong. Like, so you have to use both the film that you see at the Senior Bowl. But I think the beauty of what the Senior Bowl does, and this is where I give so much credit to Jim, I give so much credit to the scouting department. They make sure that they get the right players that probably won't get that shot at other opportunities. And they get them in front of scouts and GMs to have meetings to where they get to build those relationships before Indianapolis. And if they don't go to Indianapolis, well, you have that relationship to where you want to build and see what they are as a person and an individual. And the individual part is as important as the player that you're getting on the field.
So what are your expectations for this weekend? Who is it more – what team is it more important for to leave it with a win?
I feel like Chicago, if I'm being just honest, because you get a win like this, confidence starts to build. Like, I remember last year when the Texans went down to Jacksonville, of all places. Oh, well, look at that, where you guys are. And we got the win in week 3. And Tank Dell
was in Jacksonville.
and Tank Dell went off in that game. And that was really the start of the relationship between number 3 and number 7 being a go-to, let's just get this thing on the roll. And when they did that, a win like that over an opponent that is very hyped up to be one of the contenders or quote-unquote contenders, it allows you to have the ability to think that you can go toe-to-toe with anybody. And right now, depending on when the Bears play against Green Bay, I haven't looked at their schedule, but if they play against them when there is
no 11.
So, okay, you probably are facing Jordan Love twice. I apologize about that. But if you carry that momentum and you start getting wins over teams that are at your level or potentially a little bit better than you, then you start to stockpile. A quarterback gets to feel more confident. Confidence for a young player such as Caleb Williams is going to be a huge difference for what could be a 9-8 season or a 12-5 season or an 11-6 season. So you want to see him feel more adjusted to, I can do this against a team, against a D'Amico Ryan's defense. But I also think for the Texans, it's important because every win counts and people seem to still forget down here. As good as Houston looked against Indianapolis, you won by 2 points because if you trusted your wide receiver in Nico Collins and you play a first place schedule. You play a first place schedule. And so every win counts because of it benefits you keeping that lead over a Jacksonville that still has really good players, over a Tennessee that spent a lot of money in the offseason. I don't know what Will Levis is going to be, but I don't think neither does really Duran Carthon at this point. Neither does Brian Callahan. You look at Indianapolis. I mean, big time plays. They were right in that game until the end and they got a block punt. Similar to what Chicago got, they capitalized with the Jonathan Taylor touchdown. My fantasy team got points, so I'm not complaining that much about that. But still, it's like you see that if Houston can get another win, they stay one game ahead of everyone else in that division because they're all 0-1. So it's like, yes, Houston needs a win, but I think Chicago, just for the aura of that locker room, you barely squeaked by and you were down 17-3 at one point going into halftime against a Tennessee team. If you beat Houston in their own backyard in a night game where that atmosphere for the first time is going to be ravenous since 2022 and really since 2019, it carries a lot of weight for what that locker room can be going into week three and moving even deeper and deeper into the season.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of it is like getting that a little bit of confidence built because I don't think Caleb Williams is one of the guys who after a bad game is going to completely crash. But you do want to start to build something. And especially if Rome's not playing, if Rome and Keenan aren't playing, it's going to be very scary. But yeah, I'm a little worried about that. It'll be Tyler Scott and hopefully they actually use Cole Kmet this week. It will be interesting. It was funny when you just said that the Texans-Jags game here in Jacksonville because that was like Tank Dell's like, okay, this is Tank Dell. I specifically remember tweeting, like, I think Jacksonville got the wrong tank because they got
Bigsby,
yeah. Which also he looks like he's doing better than last season. But at that point, I was like, we should have got Dell and not Bigsby. This is a problem.
It was a good game. But like those are the type of games that you're looking for. It's like where Stroud felt comfortable and he's not playing from behind and he has that number one. And you're probably not getting a dude say, like, let's call a spade a spade. He's probably not playing this week because you need him. But like imagine if he and DJ Moore just built that relationship. And now Moore gets a 200-yard performance. And lo and behold, now we paid him a lot of money because we believe he can be a number one. And now we got our franchise quarterback easily putting him on the money. They're gonna be fine. Like that's what you're looking for in this game.
Yeah, I think most fans are just looking over like 100 yards at this point. And it's honestly sad. Like I kind of laughed at the end because I was like, Justin Fields did this, I think like 4 times where he had 100 passes under 100 yards passing and everyone just gave him hell. And then so for not saying like I'm cheering for Caleb Williams, but obviously I told you a long time ago, I was like a pro let's build around Justin. And everyone immediately told me it was going to be like, 4,000 yards passing. It could still happen. It's going to be a long shot at this point. But in my head, I was like, this is the most Bears thing to happen. You get this quarterback that is supposed to be and he can't get 100 passing yards at home. And I was like, okay.
I had the Titans.
I know. I will say that defensive front, I think, looks better than maybe some people thought it was going to be.
Their secondary is really interesting to me, too.
T'Vondre Sweat looked good, and like obviously he's a rookie, and he was already kind of like he was making some splashes on there. I honestly think their defense will be decent, but it is Will Levis. But anyways, thanks Cole so much. Have fun this weekend. I know it's a late game Sunday night, that means I get to think about it all day long and wait.
No, it's going to be great. I cannot wait to show up at the press box at 5 p.m. to show up at 3 a.m. to wake up the next day and be. Talking all things SEC, talking all things Texans, and at 8:30, be like, why am I here? Why am I here at 8:30 in the morning? I should have just bought a cot and slept.
Yes, just stayed here. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate you for chatting with me again, and we'll talk again, I'm sure.
I guarantee you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.